Thanks for joining us on the JX today. We'll talk about the cannabis business to start. Both of our states have seen a revolution in recent years as voters approve new laws allowing marijuana for personal as well as medical use. In Humboldt County, where cannabis cultivation has been a thing for a long time, there's a real focus on the business. The university, Cal Poly Humboldt, offers a program in cannabis studies, and there's outreach beyond campus as well. Next week, April 5th, the campus hosts a symposium on cannabis and environmental stewardship, exploring the care of the land along with the use of the land. Two guests give a preview. Dan Marr is a lecturer in cannabis studies and environmental stewardship, a permaculture expert, and the keynote speaker at the symposium. Dan, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Dominic Korva is with us as well, the Director of Cannabis Studies at Cal Poly Humboldt and co-director of the Humboldt Institute for Interdisciplinary Marijuana Research. Welcome, Dominic. Dominic, you there?
Thank you.
There we go. Okay.
Good to be here.
Good to have you. Take us back a couple steps.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Pleasure to be here.
You there? Well, we could hear you.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. Take us back a couple steps, and let's talk about cannabis studies at Cal Poly Humboldt. How long and how many students enrolled?
Well, this is actually the launch year, and we started the year with 17 majors. We also got the minor off the ground this year, so we have a fairly large amount of folks interested in the minor here. And the program itself was part of the application by the university to become Polytechnic University. So it was a new program. They needed three new programs. The application in cannabis studies was one of those. So I actually co-designed it along with Dr. Josh Mizell, my colleague in sociology. It's important to understand that just like at every other public university in California, we cannot touch the plant. And this is a liberal arts major in the College of Social Sciences. It is not a business major. It's broadly oriented towards getting people towards careers and professions that aren't directly touching the plant, which happen to be the ones that have long-term growth and professional prospects around the world, really. So,
is that proscription against touching the plant because of federal funding?
That's correct. That's exactly correct. Mm-hmm.
Now, talk about environmental stewardship. I mean, you're talking about people not going into the business, so that wouldn't necessarily touch on this. But, I mean, it seems like that is a rather important thing to convey to people who are going to be in the business of perhaps eventually touching the plants and growing them.
Yes. Let me let Dan take care of that.
Please.
Well, you know, we're talking about an agricultural product here. So all agricultural products require natural resources, regardless of where, how they're being grown or cultivated. In our particular area, most of our farms have direct resource requirements from the habitat in which they're being grown. A lot of our farms are in upland watersheds, so they rely on some sort of water extraction, whether it be groundwater or surface water. Folks have been making the transition into making sure they're storing water in the wintertime or switching to rainwater catchment systems. But then we also have to look at the infrastructure that's involved with these systems, roads accessing farms and then therefore accessing distribution and markets is another big one because our counties are so they're so rural and widespread that infrastructure is another big issue. So a lot of these things really come to the forefront both economically and ecologically. So when you're maintaining, you know, a farm while at the same time you're interfacing with wildland habitats, that requires a lot of maintenance, and that maintenance comes with a cost.
Particularly when you talk about things like infrastructure, I just wonder how much more rigorous the requirements are to get into the legal marijuana system. I mean, it seems like, you know, with the state regulation and all that stuff, there's probably quite a few things that people need to do that if they were growing in the days before it was legal, they didn't have to do, even close to that.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. But I think it all has to do with scale as well. You know, if you're a small operation and, you know, small, we consider 10,000 square feet or less, then there's so many natural resources that are available to you where your cost essentially comes down. And if you're looking at something like water infrastructure, if you're capturing rainwater in the wet season and storing it, then you're exempt from many agencies' regulations because you're not involved with waters of the state, like a surface water diversion would. So scale really plays a role in this as well. And I think that also goes into the business as well. It's like if you're a small scale farm, then your quality control is a lot higher and you're bringing a product that's potentially of greater quality to the market.
We're talking about cannabis cultivation here on the Jefferson Exchange and environmental stewardship in the preview to the Symposium on Cannabis and Environmental Stewardship coming to Cal Poly Humboldt on April 5th. Our guests are Dan Maher, who will be the keynote speaker, and Dominic Corva, who's the Director of Cannabis Studies at Cal Poly Humboldt. If you have questions or comments or thoughts about marijuana cultivation and stewardship, join us on the exchange with your emails, jx@jeffnet.org. Dominic, talk about the people invited to attend and what you're thinking in terms of attendance.
Yes. So the people in attendance are going to be three different kinds of stakeholders, basically. We have the public sector agencies that are involved in both regulation and also increasingly in grant programs, actually, not just to cultivators directly for doing restoration on their land, but more broadly speaking, as part of a lot of federal money that has been coming to the states to do environmental stewardship in the context of, you know, climate volatility. So basically, you know, CDFW has a cannabis conservation grant program funded by Cannabis Revenue, I believe, through the DCC. The director of the Department of Cannabis Control, Nicole Elliott, is going to be here. Fran Bean with CDFA, who is actually head of their Appalachians program, that this idea is definitely directly connected with, will be here. And so those are kind of public agency stakeholders. And we have NGOs that kind of work in between the public sector and the private sector, coming up with entrepreneurial ways to apply for grants and hook cultivators up with ways to pay for, you know, a lot of very expensive stuff they need to do, but also more generally, you know, focus on cultivation practices that are more than sustainable with respect to their watersheds and helping them steward the land more broadly speaking. There's Jackie Riccio's outfit. There's Sun and Earth certified, Andrew Black's outfit. There's Humboldt County RCDC, which also has been working with cultivators and more broadly speaking to supply grants, but also provide actually diverse livelihoods beyond cultivation that a lot of folks need, because it may be at a small scale that, you know, you can't just make a living doing that. And the answer may not just be grow other things. It may be, oh, you know, part of the year you're doing conservation work. So it's about kind of diversification of livelihoods as well. And then finally, we do have a number of regenerative cannabis cultivators here to talk about what they do and how they do it. And there's diverse contexts. So Newcomb Family Farms, you know, is a regenerative farm for other agricultural products. You see them at the Arcata Farmers Markets. They're big stars there. And we have, you know, a number of other regenerative farmers that may be up in the hills. And so it's kind of a different context for what they're doing and how they're doing it. But basically, those are the three main stakeholders. And then there's us academics who... Our main function actually is not going to headline this, but to recap it. So at the end of the day, the academic synthesis panel, which is going to be myself, Michael Polson with the Berkeley Research Center, has done a lot of work in this region on environment and community, and Robin Goldstein from UC Davis, who actually is a wine economist and viticulturalist, and he's going to be coming over from Davis, and then Siobhan Holmes, who's a graduate student at UC Davis as well. So the point is really to have this conversation about environmental stewardship that's beyond just sort of regulation and compliance, but the different ways in which diverse livelihoods can be connected that help us with both, you know, environmental sustainability and economic sustainability.
We're talking about the Cannabis and Environmental Stewardship Symposium coming to Cal Poly Humboldt on April 5th with Dominic Corva, the Director of Cannabis Studies at Cal Poly Humboldt, and Dan Maher, who is a permaculture expert, lecturer at Cal Poly Humboldt, and the keynote speaker. Questions or comments from you on the cannabis business, welcome by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We have a question from Spencer in Williams, Oregon, who wants to know... how the glut of fast-driving pickup trucks on our roadways, drastically increasing roadkill, pervasive use of wildlife-killing rodenticides, and miles of wildlife-killing fences be mitigated at this late date. Thanks for the question, Spencer. That gets to the overall realm, Dan Marr, of how do you get the people who are still growing illegally and doing the kinds of things Spencer is talking about to come into the legal fold?
Well, in my experience, a lot of that has to do with economics. So if we can find ways to kind of level the playing field for the smaller market producers who would then be able to implement systems that are more environmentally conscious, whether that be maintaining their roads, looking at alternatives to using pesticides and rodenticides, which for me is just a factor of healthy habitats. You know, anytime we have a, quote, pest, that's just an imbalance in the system. So we have to look at the system beyond what we're engineering or constructing and make sure that that system is healthy so that it could back us up. So if there's a rat problem, then you probably have a decrease of habitat value for predators, mammals, or birds of prey. You know, roads is a big issue. Roads are heavily impacted, but again, this comes down to scale, and this also comes down to the intimate relationship that folks have with their farm. Do they live on site? Are they constantly monitoring and maintaining their systems? Or is it more of a transient where they live elsewhere and they're commuting to their site? That has big impacts as well.
Do we have a sense of the ratio of land used by legal versus not legal cannabis operations? I guess the question leading to, are there enough people doing things well, using concepts of sustainability and permaculture to offset the environmental damage that comes from the places that aren't following the laws?
I would say more and more, yes, there has been a shift into more sustainable and regenerative practices. However, I just read a study that came out of UC Berkeley that, you know, from geospatial measurements, there's still more square footage in illegal cannabis cultivation in the northern portion of the state than there is in legal. But I'm really seeing a shift with the legal market demonstrating these practices as being, you know, not only economic for their business models, but also having positive ecological effects as well.
Dan, there was a question raised a minute ago when Dominic was talking. You mentioned something about other crops, and I'm curious about that. I just always think about the monoculture of cannabis as we've come to know it through the prohibition years. Are there crops that do well in a system with cannabis that complement each other and do things that are good for the soil and the environment?
Absolutely, and that would, you know, basically would pertain to where you are located. But if you think about when cannabis is being cultivated, it's during, you know, the spring and summer and early fall months. And so you can look at that as what other agricultural commodities are being cultivated at that time of year as well. We have so many farmers in our area who have diversified into being market farmers as well. So they're really good at growing cannabis. They're also really good at growing produce. They're looking at the footprint outside of their, you know, intensively cultivated space and looking at perennial crops, so, you know, fruits and nuts. You know, you have the infrastructure, you have the sun, you have the soil, you have the water. I think diversification in your business portfolio is really important because market trends, we know, change. And with the change in our climate all the time, it's really important to diversify with your crop as well.
All right. We're talking about the marijuana and actually cannabis and an environmental stewardship symposium that's coming to Humboldt State, not Humboldt State University anymore. Sorry. Cal Poly Humboldt. That'll be on April 5th. Dan Marr, you just heard, will be the keynote speaker. Dominic Korver is the director of cannabis studies at Cal Poly Humboldt. Some of the acronyms we get into: CDFA, California Department of Food and Agriculture, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, CDFW, Humboldt County Resources Conservation District, all involved in a big day. Dominic, thank you for joining us. Dan, thank you for joining us.